Hey, let's bring on guest State Republican Party Chair and Aberdeen Hoquiam Grays Harbor County State Representative Jim Walsh.
It sounds so smooth.
He's a smooth legislator, is what we're trying to say. He's got his own theme music here on The Morning Ride and Talk Radio 570 KVI. Representative Walsh, Chairman Walsh, thanks for coming on to talk to me. We got a little bulletin board worth of stuff to talk about here.
Yeah, it's summertime, Phil, but it's been very busy in Olympia and all around the state. And we try to be smooth. I try to be smooth, Phil, but I guess we'll let the listeners be the judge of smooth.
The final arbiter on smoothness. Okay.
Right.
So first thing I saw that I wanted to bring you on to talk about was that you were in court yesterday on this initiative to require proof of citizenship to vote in the state of Washington. And this is in the first kind of beginning stages of getting this statewide initiative off the ground. And a judge had to rule on what the title of the initiative would be or the language of the initiative would be. And from what I saw, how you indicated after court, you're very happy with how this judge's decision went.
Yeah, it's interesting with these initiatives, how it goes. This was a lawsuit filed by the left-wing group One America, and they are basically an open borders, very left-wing activist group.
Yeah. Pro-illegal alien, basically, is the short answer.
Basically, yeah. They were also involved in some of the lawsuits over the legislative districts over in Yakima a year or two ago that jacked up the redistricting. So they're sort of a troublemaking left-wing gadfly legal organization. They sued, challenging the title of the initiative to require voter ID when people register to vote, that require proof of citizenship. And remember, the sponsor of an initiative in the state doesn't write the title. You file the initiative, the state attorney general's office writes the title and the short description you see in on the ballot or in the pamphlet. That's all written by the state attorney general's office. So this left-wing group sued over the title the state attorney general's office had given the initiative on requiring proof of citizenship to register to vote. And they normally those two organizations are kind of aligned politically, but here they were against each other. And we kind of liked the title that the AG's office had given the initiative, unusually.
Yeah, yeah.
They're usually very confusing and they're written to be convoluted. We actually thought the title that the AG's office had written for this one was okay. So unusually, we were... I, as the sponsor, and it was technically called an intervener. The lawsuit was One America versus the state, therefore the state AG.
Yeah, AG.
But I was an intervener siding with the state AG defending the title. So the hearing was yesterday, and it's interesting in the law, Phil, on these challenges to the title on an initiative, the trial court, a state trial court, in this case in Thurston County in Olympia, heard the case. The trial court's ruling, whatever they decide about an initiative title and description, is not appealable. Oh. It's a weird section of state law. And the idea is, because time is of the essence, which is true, mm-hmm. On getting the initiative out in front of people for signatures, the trial judge's ruling in a dispute over the title is not appealable. So this was the final word. And the judge actually sided with us, sided with the AG. He made a couple of very small modifications, which the judge is allowed to do on the title and the description, but basically sided with us and against One America. So we have a very good title on the initiative. It says it heightens the registration requirements for registering to vote for new applicants to vote and existing voters in the state. It's a good title. It's not confusing like some of the ones we've seen lately, and we're pretty satisfied with the outcome. So now the initiative will go out to collect signatures. You'll be seeing that over the summer and fall, and hopefully we'll get enough signatures before the end of the year to qualify it to go forward.
So December 31 is kind of when the signatures would have to be submitted?
Correct.
Okay.
We try to do it a little bit before that.
Right,
but yeah,
exactly.
At the end of the calendar year, basically.
Yeah, I think everyone's going to want to know, okay, I'm interested in this initiative. I would sign it. You know, I would support it, and I would like to see it put up for a vote. Or if I'm guessing one of the avenues would be that, you submit it to the legislature and the legislature could adopt it or something like that with what we saw initiatives about a year ago. Yeah.
Correct. It's an initiative first to the legislature, and if the legislature doesn't
act on
the law, then it goes
they would
to the
put
people.
It to the ballot. Right. Okay. Very good. Now, this all happened in Thurston County Court. So that, I think, is kind of worth distinguishing as well. We hear about different court rulings from different what we'll call county judges, local judges, the Superior Court level. This is where this case got adjudicated that you're talking about that went favorably for this initiative effort. And I'll give out the initiative number because this is going to be a little bit of a change from what people have gotten used to when we start referring to statewide initiatives. So the initiative number is going to be known as IL26-126. And I'm guessing
That's correct.
The first 26 refers to the year in which this would potentially go to the legislature or the voters, the year 2026. And then does the shorter number at the end or the number 126 at the end kind of refer to the individual initiative number?
Correct.
Is that more or less the new numerical value?
Yeah, that's the new numbering convention. The Secretary of State's office has changed the numbering convention. It's not the four-digit number that it used to be. It's this new letter and number combination numbering convention. I'm not crazy about it, but the number we got, 26-126, is fairly easy to remember, so it's not the worst. But, yeah, they've made it a little more complicated with the numbering.
Yeah, we'll see if this initiative gets kind of shortened down to or crystallized to Initiative 126. We'll kind of have to see how it plays out, how other media outlets want to frame it and use that in their references for their reporting. Okay, so now my question about what I-126, for what I'll call it for our conversation. So what does this mean for motor voter law if this were to all go forward? Because right now we know that people go and register or get a driver's license, rather. They're automatically registered to vote, and they don't have to come up with any proof of citizenship in the state. So
that's correct.
What kind of impact would this make on motor voter is my question.
It doesn't make motor voter go away. Some people want to repeal the automatic voter registration. It doesn't repeal automatic voter registration, but it does require that when someone's being automatically registered to vote through getting a driver's license or applying for state benefits, SNAP or other things like that, they still have to prove they're a citizen. So they have to produce a document of some sort. It could be an enhanced driver's license. It could be a passport. It could be a birth certificate. If you're a naturalized citizen, it could be your naturalization document. It allows for a number of different documents to establish citizenship. But the individual being registered to vote has got to present, and it could be online or it could be in person, has to present some proof of citizenship.
Okay.
Right now, there is no requirement for that. All there is what they call an attestation. You have to say you're a citizen.
Just a test.
There's no proof of citizenship.
We're taking your word for it, right? How well does that usually work?
Not well.
Doctor, have you gone to medical school? I certainly have. How's that medical appointment going to go? That sort of thing. Okay. Jim Walsh, Republican Party Chair, State Representative from Grays Harbor County, joining me here on The Morning Ride, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Thank you for the update on initiative. We'll call it 126 right now, which would require voter ID that you just discussed. Another political story involved a trial that just wrapped up yesterday with a guilty verdict for a former Island County Republican Party chair who did not want to wear a mask when he was observing election tabulation ballot counting at the Island County Auditor's Office last November. And the whole legal argument in this case in Island County that came down yesterday was whether or not the auditor has the ability to order a mask mandate or if a public health official should be the one that's got the juice and the requirement of imposing a mask mandate for something like standing around and watching auditor's office tabulate and collect and handle all the ballots in an election. So what did you think after this guilty verdict came down yesterday?
It's very troubling. This is the weaponization of our court system. The defendants in the case were as you mentioned, it's Tim Haslow, who's the former county chair up there in Island County. And Tim's a good guy. I mean, he was there. He's a trained election observer, and he was there watching the election results being processed, like you say, after last November's general election. And the local official, that is the county auditor, in most of your counties, it's the county auditor who oversees election processes, insisted that Haslow wear a COVID mask, one of those paper or cloth masks.
An N95, whatever, yeah, but a mask.
And he said no. And he insisted that he could watch without having to put the mask on. And there was a little brouhaha. And yeah,
the sheriff's department got called. He got removed from the facility.
And then they had to give him, they gave him some space eventually where he could sit kind of out in the hallway. It was very much kind of political theater between the local county auditor and Tim. And this case went forward. The county prosecutor decided to prosecute the observer and, you know, kind of manufactured a case. I mean, yes, found some statutory references that Haslow had violated and not wearing the mask, but it was very much cobbled together and very selective, Phil. I mean, there's so much crime going on in this state. The idea that the county prosecutor up there in Island mm-hmm. County area was going to make this a felony prosecution, questionable.
Yeah, that's a great point. Let me kind of cut to another scenario. What happens if another county, you know, Lewis County, Grace Harbor County, if depending on what kind of structure you've got for the county operations, if you've got a county council that serves under a president or a county that operates under an executive, what if a president of a county council or an executive for a county goes, you know what, we're going to have a mask mandate for every public meeting that we have. And now everyone who wants to come and attend and watch, anyone who wants to come and publicly testify, anyone who's another county council member that shows up to stand sit at the dais for the course of the meeting, doesn't this open it up for that sort of a politician, elected official, to just start making their own mask mandates? Or it could be some other requirement as well.
Exactly. And that's why this is troubling, because, first of all, the defendants are going to appeal,
yeah,
as they should, and at least they've indicated they will, and mm-hmm. I hope they do, and mm-hmm. I'll help them do it if need be. This conviction is faulty. The process is faulty by which the case went forward. The court, the judge's review of the case was faulty. I believe it is an easily appealable court ruling, mm-hmm. and it's important for the reasons you say. This is the selective prosecution and weaponization of what are really interpretations of the law that are not good,
yeah,
for individual rights or for really the effective implementation of law and order. It's weaponizing the ability of a bureaucracy to make edicts on individuals, and it's just not good law, and it's not good public policy, and I think it will be, I think it'll be reversed.
It just seems like it opens it up for any elected official, you know, an auditor, a treasurer, an executive, a president of a city council or a county council that kind of has that leadership role, could just start imposing their own rules by dint of what the auditor in Island County ended up doing and how this applies on this guilty verdict yesterday. Final subject for you and I to discuss here about something that's intrinsic to the Washington legislature and your work as a state representative. And this is about the electrification of the state ferries that Jay Inslee imposed on all of us and the incredible costs that go along with it. There was a work session amongst House Senate Transportation Committee members here earlier this week, and the Democratic chair of the State House Transportation Committee is a Tacoma state representative, Jake Fye. And Jake Fye said something that's incredibly important about all these costs on electrification of the ferries, Representative Walsh. He said, quote, "We can't do everything we want to do. We can't buy everything we want to buy. So let's talk about the priorities." And this was all in relation to the incredible costs that are going into this and some of these missed promises that Jay Inslee made about how this was going to lower our carbon footprint and carbon emissions. From what Jake Fye says in that quote, do you think that he's ready to push back on the Democrats? Can he change the course of what's going on with all these costs that we're going to be soaked with for electrifying the ferries because that's what Jay Inslee wanted to do?
Well, yeah. I mean, Jake Fye out of Tacoma, one of my colleagues in the legislature, is actually a fairly reasonable guy. I mean, he's a Democrat and he's an old school liberal type, but he's not crazy and sort of bipartisan. He's what you want a legislator to be, and he's just acknowledging reality here. The whole idea of electrifying the ferry fleet for Washington State ferries is a fairy story, Phil. Mm-hmm. I mean, the technology does not exist in any practical way to turn the boats into 100% electric.
Yeah, without shoveling out a ton of money to do it.
Well, even if we shoveled out the ton of money, and I think this is Jake Fye's point in part, is even if we shoveled a ton of money out, there isn't a sort of robust, reliable system for running electric ferry boats. And remember, these are big boats. These aren't little sailboats. I mean, these are big ships that carry people and cars and have to be able to go through rough weather at sometimes and be reliable. And even if we could put the batteries in the boats to run the engines, how do we charge the batteries? It's the process isn't just putting the batteries in the boats. It's how do we electrify the terminals at each end of the boat's run to charge up the boat fast enough to allow it to make its trips back and forth,
yeah, without,
you know, between Seattle and the Whidbey or wherever it's going over to Kitsap and in Bremerton and Port Townsend, wherever the boats are going. They've got to be able to get there. And even if we could put the batteries in, which make the boats a lot heavier, and you have to redesign the boat that way, again, the challenge is how do we electrify the terminal so you can charge the boat fast enough?
The longer it takes to make that charge, the less service you have for the riders and the passengers.
Exactly. And Inslee was always clueless as governor. He was one of the most useless governors the state's ever had. Mm-hmm. And he didn't care that the technology didn't exist.
Yeah, the practicality wasn't there.
He wanted to dictate it anyway.
Yeah.
And it's similar, Phil, to what he was trying to do with trucks. You know, this requirement he was trying to make that all semi-detached trucks, you know, tractor-trailer trucks, would be electric.
Again, 2035, right?
Technology didn't exist to do that. And it was just like, it was really what it was, Phil, it was photo ops. This guy just wanted a photo op in front of an electric boat or an electric school bus or an electric truck. He was so... There's no other way to say it, Phil. He was so dumb that all he wanted was the headline and the press coverage and didn't care that the ideas were not implementable. And how many millions or tens of millions or hundreds of millions of Washington taxpayer dollars did this guy burn chasing these dreams?
And add to that just everybody's time where we ended up have boats taken out of service and then people had to wait longer to get back and forth at a ferry crossing. That's a factor here as well. A whole lot of wasted time because of Jay Inslee's myopia for his climate agenda. Well, we're wrapping up the interview here with Jim Walsh, state representative, Republican Party chair here in the state of Washington. And I have a campaign yard sign that I think you're going to like. I saw this one posted on social media. We could be making these on T-shirts. We could be making these on bumper stickers. We could be making these for campaign yard signs. And it says, Jim, vote Republican. They may not be perfect, but the other side is insane. And I think our conversation has underscored that pretty well.
I will take that into account, Phil, and you'll see them cropping up here or there, I'm sure.
I'll look forward to that when I show up at an initiative signature gathering event for Initiative 126 that's going to end up going into effect here to do the signature gathering for requiring proof of citizenship to vote in the state of Washington. Thanks for all your time today, Jim.
Yeah, great to talk to you, Bill. Have a great weekend, everybody.
You bet. We'll talk to you soon. Okay,